On this episode of 10 with Ty,
Chris Gray knows a shitload about property, loves his cars and boats, doesn't mind a beer, and in no particular order. How's that sound, Chris?
I reckon that's a perfect sum up. You can speak at my funeral if you want.
He has a $25 million property portfolio.
As you can see, I've got an amazing view behind me.
So what's his secret?
I think the new generation is you get rich by spending money these days. The old school of do it yourself and save the money is a false economy.
It's all coming up on 10 with Ty. Hi, I'm Tyrone Hyde, the CEO of Washington Brown, the property depreciation expert. Now, I'm a qualified quantity surveyor and also a best-selling author who's helped hundreds of thousands of property investors over the years pay less tax through depreciation. I'm also an avid investor, which is why I created the podcast series, 10 with Ty, where I ask the smartest people I know the same 10 questions to unlock the keys to their success and hopefully leave a playbook for my family and your family too about investing. Now, this podcast is general in nature and not specific to your financial circumstances. We always recommend you sit down with an accountant or financial planner before making any investment decisions. Now, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome to 10 with Ty. My next guest is Chris Gray. He's a contrarian when it comes to property, or his views are. He's a former accountant turned property strategist. He's written 6 books on property investment. He owns a buyer's agency called Your Empire, and he was host of Your Money, Your Call on Sky Business News for 10 years. That's his official buyer, but I've written my own one for Chris. Chris Gray knows a shitload about property, loves his cars and boats, doesn't mind a beer, and in no particular order. How's that sound, Chris?
I reckon that's a perfect sum up. You can speak at my funeral if you want.
Now, before we get into 10 with... Oh, welcome to 10 with Ty, by the way. Before we get into my world-famous 10 questions, I just want to ask you a couple of questions. Firstly, what are your contrarian views that go against the grain when it comes to property investment?
Look, it's pretty much everything if you look at your parents. So the whole idea of go to school, get a good education, go to university, then get a good job, buy a home, get married, white picket fence, pay it off over 25 years, then start investing over that. I thought rather than create this good job and then create wealth, why not start creating wealth straight away, which is when I started at 22. And I was always so busy with my social life and doing other stuff, I never had time for a full-time job. And so whilst I did work kind of hard in my 20s, it was never to build that career because I thought the ultimate thing is you build a career to create money, to create wealth. Why not just create wealth from the start? Mm. And then you can choose what you want to do for the rest of your life.
Right. And has that been your rent vesting strategy or how have you achieved that?
Oh, look, it's pretty much my thing for living. So even in my 30s when I was at Deloitte's, I did a 40-hour job in 20 hours so I could have 20 years out, the other 20 hours for property investing or hanging out. And my big thing has always been lifestyle. So again, I'm into cars and boats and traveling and all these other things. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily 5-star. I'm just as happy with 1-star and traveling. But I always put lifestyle first, but as long as I'd invested some money to kind of look after the long term as well. And so where a lot of people concentrate on their net equity or their net wealth, I was always on how many assets you control. So rather than have $1 million paid off house, I'd rather have $10 million of property and $10 million of debt, i.e. I'm worth nothing, because 10 doubles to 20 million, whereas one only doubles to two. And so I wouldn't go for the cheapest home loan. I'd go for the bank that lends me the most money because rather than saving you a few dollars and cents, I want to make another 10 grand or 100 grand or another $1 million.
What about with interest rates rising? Hasn't that stressed you out a bit?
Oh, I haven't got a single hair on my head now.
But in reality, how have you coped with that? It's probably harder to borrow that much, right?
It's tough. So I mean, we can talk about my numbers. My debt's in the range of kind of 12 or 13 million. So you increase the interest rates by 4%, I've got to find another 500 or 600 grand a year. Wow. Now, obviously, most people don't even earn that kind of money. So that's all part of the cycle. So in the good times, rather than blow all my money, that's when I was then pulling equity out, making sure I've got equity buffers, so that I can ride these downtimes without having to panic sell. Mm. Now, over the last 30 years that I've been investing, we've had lots of ups and downs, GFCs, COVIDs, credit crunches. I pay 10 or 11% interest rates. I pay down to 2 or 3. And the whole idea is this isn't a hobby business. This is big business. Like I've got 20, 25 million of property. And so that's, if you think of that as a business rather than just an asset base, that's a lot of money to deal with. And so I treat it like a business. And so I have the best advisors in the country I can have and my numbers inside out. And whilst I haven't got everything perfect, I reasonably calculate. So I could go bust at some point in time. Hopefully I won't. But at least I'm making calculated decisions, but with some very big numbers.
Mm-hmm. And how have you limited that risk of the $25 million? What's your strategy there?
So a lot of it's about the quality of the assets that I buy at the first place. So it's not volatile stocks. I'm not buying in mining towns or regional areas that might double or half overnight. So it's slow and steady wins the race kind of philosophy. And a lot of what I've learned about buying the right stock comes from, say, Sky News. As you said, I've been hosting on there for 10 years. And so I would then go and invite the guests that I wanted on there, like the economists and the banks, and I'd work out what they like, what they see as risk-free, what they're more prepared to lend on. Because your ability to go from one property to $5, $10, $20 million isn't based on what you think it's worth or how you value the asset. It's what the bank thinks, because they're the ones refinancing to then give you the equity to keep repeating. So I learned what the value is like and what they dislike to then be as aligned with the bank as possible, so that when the bank sees me, I haven't got a $5 or $10 million home. As you can see, I've got an amazing view behind me, but I'm probably one of the most well-known rentvestors. I haven't lived in my own home for probably 25 years, half my life, and I may never live in my own home ever. But to me, it's an advantage rather than a negative. So I can do these things because I know the banks hate lending on $5 or $10 million properties.
If you've got a $25 million portfolio, debt of 12, why don't you just sell the whole thing and sleep better at night? Or is that not your strategy?
Yeah, so what you could do. So, I mean, just to make the numbers easy. So say a few years ago, I had, say, $20 million of property and 10 of debt. So I could sell it all. You'd have $10 million. You'd probably pay maybe $2 million capital gains. You're left with $8 million cash. Now, $8 million cash, obviously, for a lot of people, then that's a lot of money and they can survive on that, and multiple families can survive on that. But again, my thought is that $800 or $8 million is rising by, say, $400,000 to $800,000 a year, which when you live in Sydney and there's kids at private schools and overseas holidays and stuff like that, sure, it is a lot of money. But again, my thought is say $20 or $25 million is then rising by say $1.5 to $2.5 million a year. Sure, you've got the debt, but I'm not paying for the, say, the negative gearing from my wages. It's really coming from equity or from the other properties. And so because I know my numbers inside out, I'd rather have rather than $8 million doubling to $16 million debt free, I'd rather have $25 million doubling to $50 million. And then give me a net, say, $35 million or whatever later on. Because, sure, I get a bit of stress from the debt, say, in times like this, when your repayments suddenly go up $400,000 or $500,000 a year. But in 2021, when I had, say, $20 million and 10 of debt, my portfolio was only costing me maybe $50,000 or $100,000 a year.
Right.
And so if I had $1 million in my buffer, that was going to last me 10 or 20 years. It's no stress. So having $10 million of debt is stressful. But if you already know you've got $500,000 or $600,000 worth of rent coming in from diverse properties, I'm not paying back $10 million worth of debt. I'm paying the difference between the rent and the mortgage on $10 million worth of debt.
That makes sense. Now, SQM has recently said that rents in Sydney went up 24% last year, right? Is rent vesting still a strategy with this rise in rents?
Yeah, because the reality is for rent vesting is I go and buy lots of little properties, and a little property in Sydney is 1 to 2 million, and that typically rents at roughly 3 to 4, maybe 4.5% if you're lucky. I then go and rent $5 or $10 million homes. Not many people can afford those, and the ones that can afford it don't want to rent because technically poor people rent, and so there's a social stigma against it, so the yield's only about 1%. So even if rents rise, say, 25%, I've effectively got my 4% rents going up at 25%, which is an extra percent, whereas my 1% rent that I'm paying on my home that I live in, that goes from 1 to 1.25, so big deal. Because the rents I'm receiving are much more than the rents I'm paying, so I don't mind about rent increases because I benefit.
I do. I agree with you. Sometimes we view a lot of properties. I think we've done 250,000 reports over the years. And sometimes I do an inspection. I'll go out to see this client. They might have paid, say, $1.8 million for a property. And I say, so what are you renting this for? What are you renting out for? $600 a week. I'm thinking, man, the tenant's winning here, right? You know, once you take into account property manager fees, they don't value the repairs and maintenance that go with it, all these other things. I'm thinking, you must be clearing like $200 and you just pay $1.8 million for the property. Anyway, all right. Are you ready to play 10 with Ty, Chris?
Let's fire away.
All right, question number one, Chris. What has been your best investment?
So probably one of the best ones I've done, and it's been in quite a few magazines, was in the GFC. So roughly around 2010, everyone said the world was coming to an end, a bit like COVID. Mm. Worst financial crisis we've ever had in the world. You shouldn't be buying. I went and bought a $1.9 million block of units in Coogee. It was a block of five units. I think it was three two-bedders and two one-bedders. I then spent $600,000 on it, so it cost me $2.5 million. I converted some of the one-beds into three-beds, bolted balconies on the front, refurbished the whole block. So it cost me $2.5 million, and then the bank revalued it at $3.5 million 3.5 months later.
Wow.
So I basically increased the equity by $1 million. I then got, I think, a 70 or 80% loan on that $3.5 million, which repaid me all of the $2.5 million back. Plus, it gave me a $300,000 buffer as well. So basically, bought a property, renovated it, got all my money back, plus an extra $300,000 in about 3.5 months' time. So if I could do that once a year, that'd be an amazing thing. But unfortunately, life doesn't work that way.
It doesn't, does it? Just a couple of questions on that. So do you still own it?
Yes, I do.
So it's still sitting in your portfolio. And big question, how do you turn a one-bedder into a three-bedder?
It's absolutely amazing. This is the smallest three-bedder in the world. It's about something like 60 square meters, which is horrendous. And there's almost no windows. So this is in the middle of the block. It was basically a one-bedder, but then there was the other side of the block was like a little garden shed. And so we enclosed that and then put that in there. And then there was a little storage room that we managed to turn into a third bedroom. So in Coogee, obviously beachside suburb, the amazing thing is for students, it's perfect. So we would get people from, say, the University of New South Wales that could normally only afford to live in Randwick, but they could then move into Coogee for maybe $600, so maybe $200 a bedroom. Sure, it's a small bedroom, but they're spending most of their time either at university or their job, so they're not really hanging out at home. So it's almost just like a bed at night. So if it's dark, there's no real windows, doesn't really matter to them. So the only time we've had a problem was in COVID. No, because people were staying at home, that would be the worst place in the world to go and live in the middle of COVID because you've got three of you in there, no windows, no outdoor space. And so it'd be pretty tough. But for the rest of the 10 or 15 years I've owned it, it's been very, very good.
Fantastic. Now, question number two, Chris, what has been your worst investment, Chris?
So probably the worst, and again, I think of them as learning experiences. So I don't think I've made mistakes. I've made learning experiences, and even if you lost $100,000 on one thing, if it saves you $200,000 from the next one, then that's a good investment of money or time spent well. So probably it was buying a house and land package up in Brisbane. This was in early 2000s. I did a joint venture with a guy from the UK. He basically wanted to buy a property. He couldn't get a mortgage. So I worked out how I could double his rent, double his capital growth. I would do all the work. And I'd only benefit after he got his money. So I only basically made a profit after he made a profit. And so we ended up buying a house and land package because he was a foreigner. So we wanted to buy something brand spanking new. And look, it did go up. So I think we bought it for about $300,000. I think we sold it for about $450,000 quite a few years later. So in the time it went up by 50%, Sydney equivalents in the eastern suburbs had gone up by 100%. So sure, I still made a profit. So it wasn't a bad mistake. There was lost opportunity. But again, this was at the start of me building my portfolio. And so rather than then go and buy a whole bunch of other properties, like 10 or 20 million of those, at least I only bought the one and then I moved on from it.
Chris, number three, what has been the most valuable investment advice you've ever received?
Probably the best investment advice I had was a guy from called John Edwards from Residex, who you'd remember from the old days.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times people would talk about how can property prices keep increasing when wages aren't keeping up with house price inflation. And he gave the answer to say, well, in the parents' generation, they had double-digit interest rates. They had massive blocks. They had one income earner per family. These days, we've got smaller blocks. We've got double income per family. We've got interest rates in the single figures. And we've got government grants and things like that to give first home buyers a chance to get into the market and things like that. But he said the real thing that pushes property prices is when you go to the blue chip areas. So if you think of, say, in Sydney, the eastern suburbs or eastern beaches, low north shore in the west, you avoid the CBD because there's no limit of supply and height restrictions. In those other areas, you get three-story height limits. And so in those areas, there's no more property. So there's no supply. And there's still lots of demand from young professionals with high-paying jobs, wealthy parents that will give them deposits and stuff like that. And we're not talking about buying $50 or $100 million Point Piper. We're talking about $1 or $2 million Bondi or Manly.
Yep.
He said, the basic law of economic of supply and demand, like that you learned at school, that's the thing that will keep pushing prices up. And that's why I think that is the most solid market in Australia or in the world, is those blue chip markets, because there is no affordability problems there.
So the saying, they're not making any more land, I tend to think that's true in those areas, right? But where you've got an infill site and you're subdividing, they are making more land. They've just created more land to sell, right? But definitely not in Bondi. And that's why it's a solid investment. Not that anyone can afford it.
So when I bought that house and land package, the presenter there, who's another author as well, it was the classic line of land appreciates, buildings depreciate, which is obviously your territory.
You say that like it's a bad thing, Chris.
And so obviously you should buy something with the most land content that you can. But what I've since learned, it's about the quality of the land. Say for $1 million, you get a one bedder in Bondi. In Melbourne, you get maybe a townhouse or a semi. In Queensland, you get a four-bedroom house. And in the Northern Territory, you get 1 million acres. But in the middle of summer, are you going to get 50 or 100 people queuing up for those 1 million acres in the Northern Territory? No, because there's no demand for it.
Mm.
So it's all about the quality and the scarcity of the land rather than the quantity.
Now, just to clarify, land appreciates, buildings depreciate. We do know that. But you, as an accountant, you would recommend that once someone buys it, once they've bought that investment property, an appreciation schedule from Washington Brown's a no-brainer, right, Chris?
Oh, 100%. Because again, in the early days, so I didn't know about depreciation until probably 20, 25 years ago, in my late 20s or 30s. Again, a lot of the firms were almost guaranteeing that whatever you spent on the report, you'd be getting that within the first year or two in deductions. So it's a no-brainer. It pays for itself. Why wouldn't you go and get those deductions?
Yeah, excellent. Okay, question number four. What's your ideal portfolio? Because you've got a portfolio of $25 million. Is it all in resi or have you split it?
So look, I'm not the poster child for diversification. I'm more for specialization. So look, if you go and diversify, so if you have properties all around Australia, sure, that can be good. Ideally, you get a bit of each market as the cycle moves around. I'm very much more into specialization, that I know my subject, the type of property I'm investing in, inside out, because that's all I've done for the last 20 or 30 years. So all of mine is resi property. Probably 90 or 95% is in Sydney, in blue chip. The other 5 or 10% is in the UK, outside of London, similar kind of thing. So look, it's not ideal. I've then got pure cash, in terms of buffer or offset accounts or redraw accounts. But look, one day I should buy some shares, but I'll buy some shares when I'm rich enough that I can afford to lose the money.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Do you own an investment property? Washington Brown has helped over 250,000 property investors pay less tax with a depreciation schedule. Visit washingtonbrown.com.au to pay less tax today.
Number five, Chris. Now, let's say you've got children. Let's say one of your kids come up to you and said, Dad, I've just saved $20,000, right? They've worked at Macca's for a couple of years. How would you tell your 20-year-old child to invest that money?
Yeah, well, I'm forcing my kids to read my books and saying, do you want to work for the rest of your life? Because they say all the daddies at school go to work, whereas you don't. I said, well, if you read my book, you could have the rest of your life to choose whatever you want to do. But they say, oh, that's boring, Dad. I don't want to read it. So now I've actually got to paying them $50 to read my book and to write notes in the back and then transcribe it into Word for $50. But that's still a slow process. So we've got a young guy in the office now called James, a guy called James Brown. Everyone that works for me seems to be called Gray or Brown or some other kind of color. He was a random guy that rang me off the back of Sky News saying he had actually earned $10,000. So he was at university, but had worked part-time in the pub. And he said, what should I do with the money? And I said, well, saving 10 grand is really, really good, but it's not going to get you anywhere, especially in Sydney property. And I'd just done a property options course, and I said, look, this is going to be a weird comment to say and probably against what your parents will say, but 10 grand's not going to get you anywhere, but the knowledge will. So I said, if you go and do this course for 4 or 5 grand that I've just done, I actually need someone to then kind of be my right-hand man to do the feasibility reports. The buy-in to the next stage is a whole bunch of us are putting in 250 grand to then buy property options. You haven't got that 250, whereas I have. Why don't you go and take a punt? I'll take a punt on you. He ended up working for me. He then started learning more about property. He then joined our buyer's agency, left his job at the pub and university, then started earning 50 or 100 grand. He basically did a joint venture with his cousin out of the army, and they bought a 700 grand pre-COVID in Vaucluse in Sydney for 350 each. They then used that and some of the equity to then he bought his own one bedder in Neutral Bay, I think at the age of 23, for 800 grand afterwards. So suddenly this is a guy that turned his life around, is earning more than his other mates, has then got effectively maybe $1.5 million worth of property now, was contrarian, so the Telegraph picked it up. So if you want to pick up the stories, just Google James Brown, the Telegraph, that they got him for doing a joint venture at the age of 21. Then they got him for contrarian investing in COVID when all these rich, clever people weren't doing it. And so, yeah, he'll probably end up richer than me. But it's very
good story. Good story. Do you want to just explain to the audience what a property options course is?
Yeah, so the options, very interesting thing, and I'd come across it a tiny bit, but not too much. So let's just say we were looking at places like Parramatta. They got, say, a block of 50 units that are worth 500 grand each. We go in there and say, right, okay, we'll pay you $1 million, but it's not guaranteed. We want an option over it. So we'll pay you, say, 4 or 5 grand option fee to have the right to buy your property for double the value of $1 million, but we need to go off to council. So at the moment, your unit's only worth 500. But if we go to council and invest maybe $1 million in a DA, with the new height limits, we might be able to take it to 500 units at $1 million each. So it's a $500 million project. But it's only worth that if we spend $1 million going to council, which you as owners aren't going to do. So the idea is we then spend maybe 250 grand on option fees to those 50 owners. We then spend $1 million, $1.5 million going to council, ideally get DA approval, then on sell it to a developer for maybe 5 or 10 million. We've then kind of 5 times our money. The owners have then got double what their properties were worth, and the developer gets a project that they can then go off and build.
Yep.
So it's high risk in that if we don't get that DA through council, we've then just gone and burned $1.5 million. The owners, they're okay. They've maybe been put on hold for a year or two, but they've made, say, 5 grand for the option fee, and they've had a chance of maybe doubling their money.
It's the highest risk, but it can be also the highest reward, the property options game.
Yeah. So we raised a little fund from our clients, and we didn't want random people in, say that James guy giving us like a 50 grand investment. So we got 20 people putting in 50 grand, so $1 million, but we didn't want young people risking 50 grand. We wanted people that ideally were already our customers. We've maybe already made them 1 or 2 million. And this was a little 50 grand punt on the side. In the end, we ended up spending a few years doing it. We've got one investment still going. So we returned half their money back. So they put in 50, we gave them 25 back. And then we've got one other investment that will ideally pay them another 25 or 50 back after that.
Fantastic.
But it's a very long-term thing. It's not for first-time buyers. It's for speculators that you write off the money and it's a bonus if you get some back. It's definitely not a mainstream wealth creation strategy on that kind of thing. But maybe doing an option for, say, on a house to subdivide it is maybe something more for the average investor or slightly more sophisticated one.
Fantastic. All right, Chris, number six, let's flip it. Let's say you've been struggling to get ahead, life's gone in the way, and you turn 50 and suddenly your parents have passed away and left you a $500,000 inheritance. So I think that might happen a bit more because obviously the baby boom's about that age now. How would you tell yourself at 50 to invest that money? Because we obviously can't give financial advice.
So in an ideal world, I try and leverage it because 500 grand cash can only double to $1 million. Whereas if you had an income and you could borrow money, Ideally, that 500 grand could be a deposit and costs on a $2 million property or two $1 million units. Ideally, I'd invest blue chip. So if I could afford Sydney, I'll go Eastern Suburbs Loan or Shore Inner West. If I couldn't afford Sydney, then I'd be going down to Melbourne. And then from Melbourne, probably Brisbane. So generally keeping to the main capital cities, because that's where the shortage of land is and that's where the most income is and stuff like that. If you can leverage it, I would. So if I had $2 million to spend, I'd probably buy two $1 million units, or you could get, which is probably one bedders, or you could get a really good two bedder for say $2 million, or maybe you go say $1.5 million, buy a few shares and maybe have a bit of money over. But a lot of people would say, well, I'm 50, I've only got maybe 10 or 20 years left, so I've only really got one or two property cycles. But I'd say that's even more reason to go blue chip and slow and steady wins the race, because if you go and screw up that 500 grand and do a property option, or you go and buy regional, or you go and buy off the plan and it doesn't work out, you've got no other chances left. Mm. When I used to run education, I had a guy at 65 come and do my course. And he said, Chris, have I left it too late? And I said, well, look, it depends how long you want to live. Because if a property cycle is 7, 10 or 12 years, and in that case was he did have 500 grand, and this was 20 years ago. And I said, well, at least if you invested 500 grand doubling to a million, that's your ideal kind of return that you want. Will an extra 500 grand help you when you're in your kind of 70s?
Yep. Yep. It just, so is that what happens with, do you get a lot of clients coming and say, hey, I've got this money? Is that how it works in your industry? And people just are looking for your, I guess, handholding of strategy?
Yeah. So classically with a buyer's agent, normally you go to a buyer's agent and you say, this is what I want. Can you go and do it? And they say, yes, sir. And they go and deliver it for you. We kind of say that, but I'd say, why don't you have a read of my book? Do you want me to suggest what I would do with your money? And quite often I'll be doing the exact opposite to what they would do.
Right.
Because they've learned from their parents, their grandparents, society, the media, stuff like that, they'd buy something nice, bright and shiny in a new suburb. They'd hear from a mate, oh, this suburb's about to go off. Let me go off and buy that. It's in COVID. Oh, let's go and buy Noosa or Byron or something like that. Whereas, excuse me, and I'm losing my voice a bit, I'm the boring strategy. So that's why on Sky I didn't have the best TV show in the world, because I wasn't selling hype and excitement and the rest of it. This is slow and steady wins the race over 10, 20 or 30 years. It doesn't sell millions and millions of books or anything, but the difference is it works. And that's the thing. So we've got clients, the most of clients spends probably 80 million with us. The cheapest is these days, maybe 500 grand. And we've got everyone in between.
And are you just Sydney, or are you branched out to Brisbane and Melbourne now?
So with Sydney that I run, we've then got affiliate offices in Melbourne and Brisbane, which are run by owners that have lived there all their life, that they know it inside out. Because when I was speaking on stage at, say, the home buyer shows in Melbourne or Brisbane, that say, I can't afford Sydney, I want to buy locally. And I said, that's fine. I can give you all the information. And even if I moved up to Brisbane, sure, I might have more knowledge than most other buyer's agents. But unless I've known the agents and dealt with them for 10 or 20 years, I haven't got the relationship to get me off-market deals and to get the best deals. And this is the thing. So for Joe Public, you could know everything, but you can't actually compete with someone that's done 100, 200, 1,000 deals with a real estate agent, because they've got that existing relationship, just like you have with your suppliers.
Yep.
And so that's the thing. So that's why I ran an affiliate office, that they get all my knowledge, but they get a local buying the property at the same time.
Right. All right, question number seven, Chris. If you could go back in time and find yourself at 20 years old, what would you tell your 20-year-old self, Chris, about investing?
When I was 20, that was a whole different lifetime. That was like the dark ages and stuff like that. Okay. So look, the keys I've learned, so I started investing at 22, I'm now 52, so been doing it for 30 years. The biggest things I've learned is leverage.
Yep.
And so it's using that 500 to buy that $2 million property. It's compounding, which is being in the market for 30, 40, 50 years if you can, because even if you get 1 or 2% growth, compounded over a long time is a lot of money. It's all about the asset value, not the net equity. So like I said, having, say, 5 or 10 million of property and 5 or 10 million of debt is better than $1 million that's been paid off. Having high amounts of debt, sure, it's risky, but it's the forced savings. You're forced to then go and do whatever it takes to pay those pay the interest on those loans. So it's a great forced savings kind of thing. Then you've got to do whatever it takes to hang on. And then the final thing is, don't listen to friends, family, and media, because most of the time they're trying to sell you shit.
That's like when you choose your accountant, one of the first questions you should ask your accountant if you're in the property industry or you want to buy properties, how many properties do you actually own? You know, they say, no, I'd probably run for that accountant. And compounding interest, I said this the other day, you know, with Dale Beaumont, and I said, I was watching Warren Buffett the other day, and he was interviewed, and he said, let me tell you something fascinating. He said he bought his first parcel of shares that cost like $150. He said, if I kept those shares and just reinvested the dividend, today I'd be worth $450,000.
Yeah.
So compounding interest is the key.
Ken with Ty is brought to you by Washington Brown, the property depreciation expert.
Question number 8. What legacy do you want to leave your family or your community, Chris?
So look, I think the biggest thing I want to do is to show everyone that anything's possible, and doing something completely the opposite to everyone else isn't necessarily a bad thing. I guess the other thing is also about kind of being honest and ethical. You don't have to rip people off, whether it's clients or other property buyers or homeowners, whatever, to get ahead. There's plenty of money to be made just being honest and straightforward. And probably the biggest things that I get, I guess, at the moment from people is people say, like, you've really changed my life. And other things are, I wish I could have your life with all the lifestyle things that I do. So I know I inspire quite a few people. I know people have left me notes or emails or texts saying, look, I've now bought 4 or 5 properties. I haven't used you. I've done my own thing, which is fine. But they've actually changed their financial future, and they've had a different life because of that.
Even someone I think I saw on LinkedIn or Facebook, someone left something under your car, under your the windscreen wiper on your car, and you didn't know them, and you changed their life.
Yeah, well, one guy had one probably about 3 or 4 months ago. He actually came up to me. So I think I was up in Chancewood or something, and just in the car park, and I was just getting in my car about to start, and some guy came up and said, you've really changed my life. I've got a note here that I wrote for you. Can you take this note? And I read it after he went, and it said, yeah, you've changed my life, which is amazing. Yeah,
it's fantastic. Well, that's a good lead into my next question, because you are obviously successful. You're working 2 hours a day. That's pretty successful if you ask me. But what does success look like to you, Chris?
In the last 30 years, I've spoken to a lot of people that are wealthy, that are high income earners, that have achieved a lot of things. I'm in various entrepreneurs groups at the moment. I think the biggest wealth is basically freedom and time. And people like Warren Buffett, there's a million people with the quotes about you can't buy time, a rich man, a poor man, they've got the same amount of time. But it really is that freedom. So I worked twice as hard in my 20s. So in my 20s, I did a full-time job as an accountant at Kodak. I then traveled up to central London 4 nights a week to study accounting, and studied at the weekend and property invested at the same time. So basically worked twice as hard in my 20s. I retired from full-time work at Deloitte at 31. So for 21 years now, I've had a much more relaxed lifestyle than most people. Obviously, I still work. I still have a business. And for those in business, you might work 2 hours a day, but in reality, it's still 24/7 that you're kind of thinking about things. But to not have to get up, to not have to do anything most of my life is a great thing. So where the teachers say to my kids, oh, what do your parents do? They say, oh, my mum goes out to work. My dad eats pizza and drinks beer and lies on the couch watching TV, which isn't quite the truth, but it is for part of it.
That's terrific.
But what I'm trying to instill in the kids is, sure, I do a different kind of work. So I'm lifting the weight of $10 or $15 million worth of debt 24/7 for decades. And so that's my heavy lifting, whereas other people, their heavy lifting might be 60 hours a week. Whereas I'm trying to leverage my thoughts, my expertise to do something kind of different. But the freedom it gives me for traveling. So normally I travel 10 or 15 times a year. I'm into my vintage cars and stuff like that now, and boats and stuff. A lot of it's not necessarily expensive, but you need the time to be able to go and do it.
All right, question number 10, the final question, Chris. Now, this is why I kind of started this podcast, because I saw my father lose all his money and I've done pretty well. And I want to leave something for my daughter and hopefully your kids as well to look back on. So Warren Buffett is quoted as saying, rule number 1 of investing, never lose money. And rule number 2, never forget rule number 1. What's your best strategy to not lose money, Chris?
Okay, so four thoughts here is buy blue chip. And so it's not going to double overnight, but it's not going to half overnight. So it's the slow and steady wins the race philosophy. It's like buying your clothes from Myers or DJs.
Yep.
You buy a pair of jeans, you know it's going to last. Whereas if you go to the $2 shop or the markets, it might last 5 minutes, it might last a year. I'd rather pay good money for good quality and it lasts. The next thing is to have a 10 to 40 year time frame. So don't go in there thinking I've got to make money in the next few years. The more greed you have, the more you're going to buy off the plan or a regional area or the latest hotspot or the latest government grant. And generally those things, they're incentivizing you to go there because they can't sell it or rent it to normal people. So normally there's a big negative with that. Third thing is have the cash buffer, which we were just talking about. And then the biggest tip I've ever had, and this is from one of the biggest brokers in Australia that the ACCC caught and fought for ages, but I still got my best tip from him, always get independent valuation.
Okay.
Because sure, when you go and buy a property, the bank will do a valuation, but it will be a two-page one with maybe three comparables and it's maybe cost them $200. So even though we keep buying the same things all the time, $1 to $2 million investments, every single time we've bought for the last 20 years, we've paid, it used to be $440, I think now it's $660 for a valuation. An independent third party that proves what it's worth on a 30-page report with 6 to 12 comparables. Because I remember when I did this course 20 years ago, and they were trying to sell strata, commercial strata units down in Melbourne for cash flow. Like commercial property, it's only a couple of hundred grand. I said, it's a couple of hundred grand, why worry? And this guy, he wouldn't go too far wrong. Again, I paid the, I think, $550 for a valuation. And they said, that all that due diligence you've been given, it's all a whole bunch of rubbish. It looks impressive, but it's all out of date. It's a whole bunch of rubbish. There's so much of an oversupply. It's overpriced. Walk away. And so I walked away and I've saved a fortune from doing those kind of things. So whether you're investing for 50 grand, 500, a million, 10 million, 100 million, get an independent valuation. It's a no-brainer. It's a tiny little cost to double check you're doing the right thing.
I think that's probably the best answer I've had for that one, for number 10. Thank you. That's why Chris Gray's on the program. I agree with you. Independent valuation. People spend, you know, $2 million on a property, but not spend $600 before you buy it, get an independent val. Must be hard though now. What about with property, when property prices are like, you know, you've quoted $2 million and it ends up going 20% extra at an auction or private sale. How does that work in terms of getting an independent val?
So even if you go and buy five of them, like, so say we go and get a valuation. So we'll get a valuation on a property and it's, say, $950 to $1 million. We know we're happy paying at the upper end of the valuation, i.e. $1 million, because we know in the cases over the last 20 years where we haven't bought it and it's carried on till auction, it sold for $1,050,000 or 1.1 or even 1.2 in the really extreme cases. Just because you're paying a dollar more than someone else at auction doesn't mean that's market price, because we've been seeing properties that we've been offered for $1 million that we've said, no, we don't like it. It's no parking, development site next door. We've then had clients that didn't use us that then we found out they paid 1.2 for it. Yeah. And they say, I only paid another grand more than the other person. Is just because you've got two stupid people at auction that don't know the value of the property that have both bid an extra 200 grand doesn't make that property worth 200 grand more that we wouldn't even pay $1 million on it. Now, let's just say you had to buy 10 valuations to get there. It's cost you 6 grand. Would you rather overpay 200 grand or pay 6 grand for valuations, 9 of which you didn't make the most of?
Mm-hmm.
So good again, advice. I think the new generation is you get rich by spending money these days. Spending money on valuations or on buyer's agents or on depreciation reports or whatever it is, whereas the old school of do it yourself and save the money is a false economy.
I'm surprised actually a lot of people don't, especially with larger stock that we deal with in depreciation, people don't get two reports or three reports. There's nothing stopping someone getting three depreciation, because depreciation is actually the only subjective claim that you can have as a property investor. Everything else, your property management fees, your stratas, is basically what you get as an invoice. Whereas I might value the construction cost as X and someone might value X times 1.1. So it does surprise you that people don't do that sometimes.
Yeah, so maybe you need a little, like all the petrol companies, you all can't get together. We'll offer a 3-for-1 package. Buy a report from all three of us.
But, I think there might be laws around that, Chris. Now, there is a bonus question which I haven't told you about. It's related to your skill set, and obviously helping property investors and property owners is your skill set. It's obviously really hard for young people to get on the property ladder now with property prices the way they are, interest rates, et cetera. So let's say you're an average couple. Let's say I'm a nurse and my husband's a police officer, politically correct there. How would you advise that couple to get onto the property ladder with, you know, minimal savings there on the average wage? It's very hard. How would you advise them?
Look, it's tough. I think the best knowledge out there is books. Because like we've talked about the media, and look, I've had most of my life in the media and writing, I guess, articles and being on Sky News and stuff, and I'm telling people don't listen to the media, is because most of it is hyped. And you're getting all of the guests on there would have had marketing reasons why they would have come on my show, just like I'm on your show. Everyone's got a vested interest in doing something. Generally with books, for $30 or something, the amount of information you get from a $30 book can almost be comparable to what you might get in a $4,000 or $5,000 course. And look, maybe you get 70 or 80% of it. And so when I went to do the renovators on Channel 10 about 10 years ago, I'd done some renovations, but I went to New Zealand for the weekend. I went to Dimmocks and I bought 15 renovation books. I read them on the plane. And while I was over there, every time I learned something new, I wrote it in the back of the book. By the time I got to the 10th or the 15th book, I was hardly writing anything down, because most of the knowledge I'd already gained from the other books. Yeah. And that's an education for a few hundred dollars and say 100 hours of your time or something like that. I think that's one of the best ways to get a general understanding, because you're never going to know everything about property. You're still learning, I'm still learning, but it's all about getting 80%. So you can learn that the tips like the valuation to stop getting you into too much trouble. So I think that's part of it, is build some knowledge, but without trying to get 100%. It's then using people like mortgage brokers. Mortgage brokers are the essence of property investing now. So in the old days, then 95% about property investing was finding the right property, doing the deal, property management. Now 95% of the deal is getting a mortgage from the bank. And that's where mortgage brokers versus going direct, they've got the knowledge, they're investors themselves, they work with a lot of other investors. They're going to have the knowledge to hold your hand through the whole process in a way. Most first-time buyers can't afford buyer's agents. So I'd say you're better off probably doing your first one by yourself, because if you've only got $50,000 deposit and you pay 10 or 20 to a buyer's agent, you're going to lose most of your deposit and you can't afford to buy a reasonable kind of property. And then obviously the podcasts and stuff like this. There's so many podcasts around. There's a lot of knowledge, but still take everything with a pinch of salt at the same time.
Well, that's fantastic advice. Now, speaking of books, we're coming to the end of the show, Chris. Thank you so much. Well, speaking of books, where can people get your book?
Yeah, so probably the best one I've written is called The Effortless Empire. I wrote it back in 2008. It's still exactly the same. We haven't changed a word. The only thing we've changed is the examples used to be 500,000. Now, we then changed them about 8 years later to 1,000,000. Now, we probably need to move the examples to $2 million. But if they go to chrisgray.com.au, or yourempire.com.au, you can download that one in a PDF or an audio or a hard copy. And there's also another one called How to Live the Life of a Multimillionaire Without Being One, which is all about how to get the $5 or $10 million homes, the super yacht, the supercars, flying first class or business for the price of economy. That's a really fun thing. And that's really a book of how to spend the money to get more from your money rather than buying the home and paying it off type thing.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for being on 10 with Ty. I've really enjoyed it, really learned a lot.
Thanks a lot. And sorry, I've lost my voice. I do sound reasonably normal normally.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris.
If you own an investment property, then Washington & Brown can help you pay less tax with an ATO-compliant depreciation schedule. Visit washingtonbrown.com.au to pay less tax today.